Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
All right, let's talk some baseball with Steve Phillips, friend of the program from SiriusXM. You see him all over the Major League Baseball Network as well. He joins us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line here on the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM. Steve, always a pleasure having you on. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Steve, how much does the haircut change when you go from doing just the radio back to TV? Do you make a point where it's going to cost you a few extra bucks to go get the TV haircut?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. No, you know what? I researched this. Not that my hair is all that important to me, but it kind of is. I found a guy that does good radio hair and good TV hair for the same price.
Bravo.
So I'm in a pretty good spot right
Bravo.
Now.
Bravo. Sweet spot.
The old two for one. Obviously, whenever we have somebody on, we go to their Wikipedia page. So I'm going to ask you, do you ever think about how different life would have been had you decided to play football? You had that scholarship to Northwestern.
I did. You know, I thought about that. Denny Green was the coach at Northwestern in what would have been my freshman year. They had been going through a horrible losing streak, and they brought Denny Green in to turn things around. And what would have been my freshman year, I think they started 11 freshmen, and they lost the first game. They didn't convert a two-point conversion, and that could have been me, you know. And so I think about it, and I would have played baseball and football there. But you know what? I don't regret that although I didn't make it as a major league player, you know, I was able to sort of build a career out of playing in the minor leagues and choosing that. And, you know, what I did was I signed out of high school. And so, you know, I turned down the scholarship, and then every off season, you know, went back and got a semester of college in. So it took me 8 years to get my degree, but I stuck with it and got it. And then about a year and a half later, the Mets called to see if I wanted to be in the front office, and sort of built it from there.
Hey, Steve, were you getting into Northwestern? I have a sophomore in college and a senior in high school. I'm going through this college application thing. Were you legitimately a Northwestern caliber student, or was the sports going to help push you along?
Yeah, no, they don't. You know, they had pretty high standards there. So, yeah, I was second in my class in grade point average. And so I was what salutatorian of my class and gave a speech at graduation. And, you know, I had visited Yale, Cornell, Holy Cross, Boston College, and Michigan for my six college visits at the time. And so, yeah, I was a good student. So I was able to sort of make my way through there and ended up getting my degree at Michigan. You know, I was from Detroit. And so, you know, when I went home in the offseason, I went to school and ended up getting my degree at Michigan, which, by the way, you know, Harvard is the Michigan of the East. Yale's the Michigan of the East. Vanderbilt's sort of the Michigan of the South. And so, you know, Michigan is pretty much a premier school. And now I bleed maize and blue right now.
So you've done those deals with players being drafted and accepting out of high school that gets you the education on the back. That is people probably don't talk about that enough, but that is available if you're, especially if you have to, quote unquote, overpay to keep a kid off the college campus.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that professional baseball did was, you know, because you go into a home and you'd say to a young high school kid with his mom and dad sitting there, you know, we want you to pursue baseball and, you know, forego, you know, college right now. And he might have a partial scholarship to a school to go play baseball, because most scholarships are partial for baseball in college. And the mom, you know, mom and dad would both say, well, we really want our son to get an education. And you know, what baseball did is they made it clear, look, we can do that. We'll give him a signing bonus. And then we'll also, where's he going to school? Oh, he's going to go to Harvard, where it's $60,000, $70,000 a year. Well, we'll commit that money for him to go to college at the point. I think you've got up to a year after you retire, you're out of baseball, to use that money. The shame of it all is that only 25% of the money that has been committed for college scholarships for players that sign professionally ever get used, because, you know, guys play. You know, I get it. For me, if I played 7 years in the minor leagues in the Mets and Tigers organizations, and if I had waited 7 years and then at the age of, 25, went back to college thinking, okay, I'm going to go 4 years of college, now it would have been really tough. And so that's why going every offseason, at least sticking to it and staying in there is really valuable. It's something that I always would encourage kids to do, even if they signed out of high school.
Yeah, not looking to age you, but when you said you went into the front office, you're a fairly young guy. How big was a front office back then compared to now?
Oh, yeah, it's not even close. So, you know, I went in as an administrative assistant for minor leagues and scouting. And, you know, there was a minor league director, scouting director, a director of baseball operations, and then a general manager and assistant. And that was it. I mean, we didn't have analytics departments. You know, we didn't have, you know, we had a legal counsel who would on the work more on the business side. But that was it. I mean, you know, you had like five or six people in a front office. And, you know, when I took over as GM, I added, you know, the international scouting department, amateur scouting department, professional scouting department. So I sort of trifurcated the scouting area. And you know, we started to bring in some analytics people, but more on internship basis than anything else. We didn't have the budget for it. And where budgets have gone for front offices is so profound now. And, you know, the money allowed for that is just, you know, exponentially different. So, you know, when I went in, we enhanced the video department. We didn't even have video when I took over. So we put in a whole video system, got a, you know, somebody that the video editor and a couple guys that work shifts there. Then we ended up adding to the training staff, adding strength and conditioning coaches, adding physical therapists. I mean, you know, so really the transition for a lot of that stuff didn't start until the late 90s, early 2000s. And so baseball was always antiquated in you know, some of the things that they did. They were pioneers culturally and socially, but when it came to using video and using, you know, analytics, that we were behind the times, and yet we've made up for it pretty significantly here over the last decade or so.
Steve Phillips with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. Obviously, you are well aware of the Mets fans and their mindset. When it comes to the division, do you think they're still waiting for the sky to fall?
I got to tell you that this has been a different year in New York. And I think it's a lot about Buck Showalter. I mean, look, when I was running the Mets, and this happened after I was there too, it was always, well, there goes the Mets. They did it again. And it was like you'd walk down the street, and you'd see the pile of dog poop sitting on the ground, and then you'd keep walking right up on it, and you'd step in it, even though you saw it. And that's what it used to be like with the Mets, is that they always would step in it. But with Buck Showalter, those things that used to go wrong aren't going wrong. You know, the Mets would have crumbled in the past when the Braves came storming up and, you know, you could hear the feet pounding behind them. And maybe they still will, although there's no shame in if the Mets end up finishing as the wild card team, it's way more about the Braves than it is about the Mets. Because the Mets have played at a very high level of baseball, like a 660 or 670 winning percentage. It's just that the Braves are playing out of their mind. And so, you know, and so I think that in New York right now, there's a real belief in this team. They, you know, although I will tell you that if the Mets end up the wild card team, they will enter the playoffs feeling like a failure. And that's not a good way to start your playoff run. And, you know, I think both the Braves and Mets understand that if you're the wild card team, not only do you host, you know, that three game best out of three, but then you have the privilege of playing the Dodgers in the division series, which neither the Braves nor the Mets would prefer to do.
So how much time do you spend thinking about why organizationally do we crap the bed? What is going on around here? Like, how do you exercise that? Or is that just an effort in futility?
Well, I think that, you know, good organizations always, you know, look into what they do right and what they do wrong. And I think that teams do a much better job of that right now. Theo Epstein was always, you know, I've always marveled at Theo Epstein. He made really tough decisions, and he also criticized himself, you know. And I know for me, you know, in New York, it was tough, and I was probably a bit immature when I was the general manager, and I had a manager, Bobby Valentine, who was really tough to manage. And I never wanted to sort of show my cards or show my weakness or show my mistakes, because it felt like it might get exploited and I might lose my job. And so people do a much better job today of honestly saying out loud where they go wrong. And I think it's great leadership when you do that, because it then allows everybody else to sort of, you know, own their own stuff. And there aren't secrets and there aren't resentments and those sorts of things that happen behind the scenes. So the game's changed a lot, not only in you know, some of the analytics and what's changed, but you know, I think business practices have changed a lot, and we've got some really smart people in there who understand it's okay, and maybe a higher level of maturity than even when I was there, to be able to say, you know what, I messed up right here, and I need to do this differently and learn from it, and so that everybody learns from it.
All right. We'll get to the contract coming up in a second. Put your GM hat back on, and we'll ask you what you think some of these guys might get in free agency. But did you see Moneyball in the theater, and did you know that Billy Bean was going to be calling you at one point, looking to make a deal with you?
Today is the release date of
Moneyball.
Yeah,
it's 11 years.
Oh, it's 11 years later. So yeah, here's the thing. I did see it in the theater, and I did not realize until I heard my name said that my name was said in the movie. Now, you know, here's the thing. Like, my kids think the greatest thing that I ever accomplished was that I did the voice in the MLB 2K video games. Like, they thought that was the greatest thing ever. For me, I think that Brad Pitt saying my name, but it's not so much that Brad Pitt did. I figured at the time that he probably rehearsed the lines with Angelina Jolie somewhere along the way, and she probably said my name too. Mm. And so that's probably what I think is my greatest achievement in life. Is that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie probably said my name. But what I don't really appreciate and understand is, like, why did they hire a 5'4" bald accountant from Queens to play my voice? Like, you know, like I would have played my own voice in the movie, and they hired, you know, a 5'4" bald accountant from Queens, New York to play my voice when I was available to be able to do that for myself.
Very true. All they had to do was ask Steve Phillips. He would have been available, as you said. Steve Phillips was.
I thought you were going to ask about the DePotesta thing, how they picked Jonah Hill, which I'm sure pissed the hell out of, you know,
I think he's openly
Potesta.
Admitted
he probably
that.
Didn't like that much either. Yeah. Yeah, he probably didn't like that too much either, because they don't really look anything alike. The other thing about the movie that is so unfair is the way it portrayed Art Howe. Art Howe may be the nicest man I've met in baseball in all my years in baseball. Like, he is as fine a man and gentleman as you're ever going to find in. And what Richard Hoffman,
Philip Seymour,
Seymour Hoffman. He portrayed him as a curmudgeon, and that is the furthest thing from the truth about Art Howe. Like, he is the kindest, nicest guy ever, and so easy to get along with. So, you know, but look, they're taking dramatic license with it. And, you know, it didn't portray me all that great, but I think that part of it is that, you know, the writer who wrote the book only sat in Billy Bean's office, and he never understood the other side in the trade discussions. So whatever they viewed our position was, that was their truth. The reality is that we were after Ricardo Rincon just as much as Billy was. We had no interest in Scott Benefro, who he was trying to dump on us as a left-handed reliever so he could get Rincon. We were trying to get a handle about where Billy was with Cleveland on Rincon so that we knew what we might have to do to try to get him.
Now, did you end up paying for his soda, or was that somebody else?
Paying for
his soda. Remember, that was part of the deal. That whole scene, all of a sudden he does a deal. There's a throwback when David Justice has to spend a dollar to get a soda out of a machine. And in that scene, when he's calling all the GMs, he gets a deal. He says, you're going to pay for my soda machine stuff for the next 3 years. Yeah, that was not you. Yeah, you were not responsible for the soda?
No.
Okay.
No, we were not. We were not responsible for that. We were not.
Well, your record has been set straight, Steve.
You're in a Jersey Wawa getting gas. So you're going to go inside and get a pretzel. A Mets fan recognizes you. You're standing there. He's standing there. And what's the most likely thing a Mets fan will say to you?
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Oh, nowadays they'll say, oh, we miss you. You did a great job. Thanks for everything. Back then, they would say, you idiot, why didn't you get A-Rod? And why didn't you get A-Rod? Why did you trade Lance Johnson? That was always a big one I got. And why did you trade Scott Kazmir is something people say now, which, oh, by the way, I didn't trade Scott Kazmir. I was fired a year before he got fired. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, I don't think people understand. Being a general manager in New York for the Mets, I always thought was the hardest job in all of professional sports. You're in New York. There's the same expectations for the Mets and Yankees, yet you don't have the same resources. We didn't back then. We didn't. Now they do. But the death threats and stalkers that I had as general manager, I had a psychiatrist call up and say that she perceived her patient to be a threat to my life, that he had threatened me in a session, and that she was giving me his name and alerting me so that I could take appropriate precautions. I called Major League Security. They followed the guy for a couple of weeks and said, look, we don't think that he would probably hurt you, but he might show up here and kill himself in front of you. And so what they did is I had to go on the road, have an alias. And when I went to Philadelphia and Montreal, I had to have a security escort in and out of the hotel. I couldn't leave my hotel room. They had to check my hotel room when we came back after the game. I couldn't go on the field during the game. And I mean, it was crazy on it. Then I had another guy show up in the stadium saying, well, listen, he's giving money to everybody else. I want him to give money to me. Thinking I was giving money to the players, so why didn't I? And so, you know, this one guy showed up. He was nice at first. Then the next time he showed up, he was belligerent and threatening. And he gave his name the first time, everything else, and they had his ID. And so then the third time he came in really threatening, and they went to grab him. He took off running, and they grabbed his bag, and they opened up his bag, and in his bag was a Bible, which, you know, when you have somebody who's not quite right, you worry that they might be hearing voices or being directed. So they got it. We got a restraining order against them, they ended up getting him and putting him in a psychiatric hospital. But I mean, the stuff that I had a guy call up when we didn't get Alex Rodriguez and said he hopes I die a slow, painful death, and that he's going to run me off the road, and so and my family too. And so I had security would say, don't take the same route home every day. You know, go different ways. Make sure nobody's following you. I don't think people understand, and I don't know why it was me that was the one that drew all that, but the threats and death threats and stalkers were off the charts.
And now you have to work with Eduardo Perez every day.
Oh, can you believe it? Like, I mean, my goodness, like, I mean, my life is at risk every single day with Eduardo Perez.
All right.
If there's a nicer guy than Eduardo Perez, I don't know who it is, incidentally, for those that don't know.
Real quick.
He's been on the program a number of times.
Yeah, there's not much of a segue. Aaron Judge, how many years, how much?
Well, I think it's going to be at least 9 years, $37 million a year, $333 million, maybe a 10th year for $370 million. But I think he's going to have the highest AAV for a position player beyond Mike Trout. And I think it's going to be, you know, they offered him 7. They're going to want to do 8. He'll want 10. They may settle at 9, but they might have to go to 10 because I think somebody else will do it. So I have a feeling he's going to get probably 9 at 333 or 10 at 370.
Dansby Swanson.
Listen, tough shortstop market this year. But I think Swanson's probably a 6x23 guy. You know, because you've got Correa and Xander Bogaerts and Trey Turner out there, here's the thing. I don't think people realize how good Dansby Swanson is. He's really good. And I think that baseball people will recognize it. And he may be the cheapest of the four, but the most consistent, maybe the best value of the four, considering where the price tags might go on the other guys.
Real quick, DeGrom.
DeGrom's going to try to get, like, Scherzer's deal. He's going to try to get 5 years at $43, $44 million. He's going to try to do what Scherzer did. Scherzer got the 3 years, $43-plus million. I think DeGrom's going to try to get that number or a little bit more for 4 or 5 years.
And Steve Cohen is supposed to do it, right?
Oh, yeah. He already said we're going to do everything we can to keep him. And, you know, it's like when I tried to sign Mike Piazza, our owner said in the newspaper, well, you know, we're going to be willing to go about $91 million on him. So when I went out to negotiate the Piazza contract where we had him, he was going to be a free agent. I went in and offered 87.5. They're like, Steve, they pulled out the paper. Your owner said you'd go to 91. I said, all right, I'll go to 91. He goes, well, if you do that, we got a deal. We got the Piazza deal done probably in about 15 minutes. But I said, because my owner said what number we're going to go to. And so I couldn't really negotiate. So I said, well, listen, we got to just sit here for a few hours, order some lunch, because I can't go back to my owners and say that I went to the number, we got the deal done in 15 minutes. So can we just sit for a while and watch TV? And so we did. We sat in the office for a while. But the deal was done because when the owner said in the paper what you're going to pay him, and we did, there's nothing else to do at that point.
Always a fascinating ride with you, Steve Phillips. Always appreciate the time. Hopefully we can talk again once the postseason rolls around.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Steve.
Got it. Steve Phillips, one-time Mets GM, now with SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, the leadoff spot with Xavier Scruggs and the aforementioned Eduardo Perez with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.